Obstack interviewing Frank Markey. Frank, will you give us your full name, please?
Francis P. Markey, better known as Frank, throughout the area.
And spell your last
name. M-A-R-K-E-Y.
All right, thank you, Frank. Frank, when did you first come to this area?
I was born in Lime Rock, Bob, in what we used to call Hopper Town. That's up near where you are.
That's right.
Which, where it got its name from, Bob, I don't know. But when I was a kid in Lime Rock, that's what it was known as. But I was born in Lime Rock September the 6th, 1911, when Lime Rock was, to me, I think, really the hub of Salisbury, because that's where all the manufacturing was, and all the business was in Lime Rock. In fact, many men that I knew later in years came from down from Salisbury to work at Lime Rock. And my father worked in the foundries. He worked there for several years, and we lived on what was known as Brenton Hill later. We moved up to Brenton Hill from Hoppertown and lived in a little home that later Mr. Binson bought. That was the old, our homestead. But I was born in a double house near where you live on Furnace Road. There was a double house on the left-hand side going in just above, I think Mrs. Driscoll used to own a house on the corner. And the next house was a double house, and that's where I was born.
Now, that house isn't there now.
No, that house has been taken down and no longer there.
Now, just to set where that is, Marcello, that would have been, that's where
that
would have
been.
Land
that's right. It would be backing up against Marcello's, only it would be facing on Furnace Road.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
That's where that house was. And I attended school in Lime Rock, which was a three-room school.
Excuse me just one moment. Coming back to that house, did you have a chicken coop or anything?
Yes, on the right-hand side of the road.
There was
a barn and a chicken house.
Okay, now that is now a house.
Is that right?
But it we used to, that was a, because I was told that mm-hmm. it was originally a chicken coop.
That's right.
Now it is a
That's
house
right.
which is rented for people to live in.
That's right, Bob. It was it was a chicken house. People had pigs in there. In fact, we had chickens in there. There was a fellow or boy in town named Ed Carter, was his character. And if you did anything to Ed that Ed didn't like, he'd take your eggs and put them over the other guy's coop. So you didn't get any eggs that day. But Lime Rock.
So you were born right there.
I was born right there.
Okay.
That, which, as you know, you probably was, there's very few people today that were born at home. In fact, the priest at Lakeville said to me, Frank, you're one of the very few of our parish that was
True.
Born at home. Everybody's born in the hospital today. But then we had a district nurse, you know, used to come around. Miss Van Cleef, I think her name was. She came around to the homes and helped with children and did all kinds of things like that. That was and Dr. Bissell, Dr. Peterson, the old-time doctors in town, they were the doctors then. But going back to school, Bob, that was a three-room school. We had eighth grades in three rooms and three teachers. And there was a family in Lime Rock by the name of Lowe. And Esther Lowe and Helen Lowe were both teachers in that school. And another lady that came from up in Maine, Vermont, and her name was Miss Gordon. I talked to my brother. He's older than I. And I said, wasn't her name Miss Gordon? He said, yes, it was. And we had first, second, and third grade in one room, fourth, fifth, and sixth in another room, and seventh and eighth was together in the third room. And that was the school. And high school, if you got to high school, I guess you were on your own to get from Lime Rock to Lakeville. And the Falls Village kids went to Canaan, but they went by train. You see, the train went up in the morning around 8, somewhere around that neighborhood. And it came back down around 3, but there was a train in the noontime between that that ran, but that had nothing to do with the school kids, but they used to go on the train. And when I was a kid in Lime Rock, when we went to Canaan, 10 cents on the train from Falls Village to Canaan.
Wonderful.
So my father worked in the foundries, as I say, and in 1921, the foundries started to fade. They were going out. And Barnum and Richardson owned the foundries. C.W. Barnum and Milo Richardson was the big men in the foundries. There was the two foundries, which the upper foundry made wheels for the railroad. They made the car wheels there. Mm-hmm. And they were trucked to Lime Rock Station by a chain drive Mack with the hard rubber tires and loaded on the flat cars at Lime Rock Station. That's how that was shipped out. The lower shop was more of castings and gratings and all of that type, where they were laid out, the patterns were laid out, the patterns really were made in another factory, wood first, but they were laid out in sand. And when they poured those, that steel, the iron, the hot iron, or the hot molten iron, that's where they got their forms from. The molders laid out those molds in the sand, but it was to a pattern. It was made in the pattern shop across the brook. It has been torn down now. I think later years they had ran a paper mill in there or something. And then there was the machine shop down near the lower shop. So there was really four factories running, two to support the iron factories. And the ore, most of it came down from Ore Hill, and it was trucked down by teams.
Horses.
Horses, yeah. Horses drawing it down. I knew an old fellow, Bob, that was 90 years old, and he told me that they used to haul the ore from Ore Hill to Lime Rock. They'd be in the barn before 5 o'clock in the morning to have their horses fed and ready to go. And the mud would be so heavy from Hotchkiss School Hill down towards Interlaken Inn that they'd have to double the teams and take it up to the top of the hill and then go back and get the other wagon, because they couldn't take it through the mud, one team. And that's going way back, because the old gent, when he died, he was 90.
Do you know when the factories were started there in Lime Rock?
They must have been started somewhere around 1900, somewhere, Bob. I would think the 1800s and in the late 18s. I would think, I don't know exact, but it seems to me, you see, they used to cut all that wood up in East Canaan. They used to make the charcoal up in East Canaan for what they needed, the charcoal. And the fellows used to cut wood year-round. They'd cut the whole side of the mountain off up there. But then we had the... In the Lime Rock, there was the store, Boardman Amerson's store, where the next to the hotel. Mm-hmm. Then the hotel, we had a barber shop. We had movies once a week. Came down from Lakeville.
That was across the street.
Up where Wallach had his block, made his pattern there, the fabrics. That was the theater. And then, as I say, the foundries. There was a cheaper way of making iron, I think, Bob, is one thing that hurt them. And they started to go out of business in 1921. We moved up to Salisbury. But the only paved road at that time was the one through Main Street, Salisbury, and Lakeville. All the Lime Rock, Salisbury roads and Twin Lakes roads and all those roads were dirt. Those were all dirt roads.
So you spent perhaps the first 10 or 11 years.
10 years.
Now, when you were a kid, before mm-hmm. you went mm-hmm. to school, can you recall, were you able to play with other kids?
Oh, yes.
Were there other kids
the
area?
Oh, yes, yes.
And in other words, there was a good population.
Oh, yes, there was a good population. Lime Rock, there was a lot of families. And you know, when the foundries went under, houses went for practically nothing down there. You could buy a good house $300-$400, which then was a lot of money, too. But $500, you probably got the best house in Lime Rock, see? And Mrs. Stone, I think, bought up a big portion of that area. But Lime Rock at one time, then, you know, as I said to different people, they had a semi-pro ball team in the shop. The foundry paid for them. They played ball on Saturday afternoon then. There was no Sunday baseball then. And I don't remember the team, but I remember my father and them telling about Saturday afternoon, the baseball games. And the ball field, as near as I can figure out, talking to different people, that was down where Scubas owns all that area down in there where Scubas lives. That was all open down back there then. That was the field in there. So they worked in the foundry doing little odd jobs, you know, putting in window lights and wherever they needed to, doing little things. They didn't do much hard labor, but they played ball. They were there for the ball team.
Can you remember how many hours a day your father had to work? How many days a week?
Yeah, he worked. He worked 6 days a week, and it was either 8 or 9 hours that they were in the foundry, and if something went wrong, they were there later.
Were there any children working in the foundry?
Not that I know, no. No, I think the one youngest I remember, maybe like young Mike Dunn, there was a family there, Mike Dunn's, and Mike went in to learn to be a molder. So he might have gone in around 16 or 17 in that age, but no children was, no. In fact, they wouldn't even you weren't even supposed to go in there We used to go down and get my father with the horse and wagon, you know. And when we got older, my brother, he was the driver, so, and we picked him up, and another man from the other side of Brenton Hill, a fellow named Beals, they were both working in the foundry, and Bill would take him down and drop him off in the morning and go after him again at night with the wagon. But it was a very hot job, that carrying that molten iron all just like water. It had to be, because it was so hot it was white, really. But it was a hard work.
And now, again, before you went to school, when you were that young, mm-hmm. before five or three, mm-hmm. at what age did you start school, by the way?
Seems to me it was around six.
Now, before that, what kind of games did you play, or what did you do?
The summertime. In the summertime, though, we had, there was five children in the family, and we got a little older where we could weed the garden, and we had so much work to do each day. Even in the summertime, my father would say, "No, when I come home tonight, I want the garden weeded. We had hay down, we want the hay raked up, because then you raked a lot of it by hand, but in the piles and loaded with a fork, you know." But we swam a lot. We played a little baseball together. We played hide and seek, tag, all the kid games the kids play.
Where did you swim?
We used to swim in the brook down below the Iron Bridge a lot. And then there was a pond on top of Brenton Hill, just belonged to Miss Gent. She was quite a noted artist. We used to swim in that pond. But we did a lot of swimming in the brook. And, as I say, down by the first dam, that's where most of the swimming was done. Yeah.
All of the people living in your area worked in the foundry?
Most everybody in Lime Rock worked in the foundry. Yeah.
Did you know the Sandries?
Oh, yes. Santo and Libra. The one daughter was Libra. That was Melfrey. There was another girl. Libra was the one we knew the best. And then that was the Santo Sandri. They had a lot of grape arbors there at your place.
Yeah.
Used to make a lot of wine.
Yeah.
Then there was the Jake Parati's up above the bridge. And there was Mario and Livio. Livio, which we all call Midge, he was a timekeeper in the office for the foundries.
And who was Mario?
Mario was a brother of his. Okay. Mario died in the war. Mario caught pneumonia over in Germany or Italy and died over there.
Uh-huh.
And then it was Frank. Frank just died in Springfield at 81, about a month or two ago. And there's Marcello, who lives in Canaan. But then there was a family there by the name of Malcri.
You say Marcello?
Marcello lives in Canaan, yeah.
Oh, that's a different Marcello.
That's Lorenzo down there. This is Marcello Parati.
Oh, right.
The Lorenzo lived up above the Bauer Farm. They owned the farm there, Pete Lorenzo did. And Tavio ran it later years and just sold it off. And that's where that new development's going in.
Yeah.
But they didn't do much in the foundry, Lorenzo. They ran a little farm up there. But there was a family by the name of Billy O'Brien that lives up near where, I think Art Martin owns that. Yeah, Art Martin owns that house now. That was where Billy O'Brien lived. There was the Van Dykes. They lived as you started up Norton Hill, the first or second house on the right. There's a couple of houses in there. They lived there.
Where is Norton Hill?
That's the steep hill going up into comes up into Lakeville.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That was called Norton
that's
Hill.
That's Norton Hill years ago. I don't know what they do call it now. But and let's see, there
now
was...
that's Wells Hill now, isn't it?
Wells Hill is really more... up on top, yes. They do call that Wells Hill.
And but then the bottom part was called
Norton Hill. Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah.
The part close to 112.
That's right. That was Norton Hill.
Right.
And there was the Billy Finn. He lived down near where the racetrack is. And the Mike Dunns. And so many fellow named Aqualic and Kilkenny. And they were all foundry fellows. Mm-hmm. The Hines boys from over on the other side of Brenton Hill. The Jenningses from Dugway Road. They all worked in the foundry.
And they all worked in the foundry. Now these names sound like they might be English or Irish.
They are. A lot of them Irish. A lot of Irish.
Now there was a large Italian.
The big Italian, yes.
And they worked in the foundry?
They all worked in the foundry. Jake Parati had charge of the furnace, of drawing the iron and keeping the furnace in, you know, running. And mm-hmm. The most all of those Italians had died. And some Swedes and Norwegians were in there. But most of it, I think, was Italian and Irish.
How about Belgians or French or...
Malky, now Malky could be the French, couldn't he?
Uh-huh.
They lived next to Marcello Parati, or Marcello Lorenzo. In fact, I think he lived in the house that Marcello owns now.
Oh, yeah.
That was Malky. And they're all buried up here in St. Mary's Cemetery.
Hmm.
Yep. Uh-huh. And I would think that name sounds as though it could have been French.
Did Sondry work in the...
Sondry worked in the foundry.
Uh-huh. Apart from all the other work he did.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. And Mike Hines lived where Johnson lives. That's where my aunt, aunt lived
Hines.
There. Mike Hines lived there.
Uh-huh.
That was... He was married to my brother, my father's sister. And see, my father and them came. My father came over from Ireland when he was 16 years old, and my mother was born, raised in Rye, New York, and she was a laundress for C.W. Barnum. She could do laundry so neat that I used to say never find anybody like that again.
Now but your mother and father came to the States from Ireland.
My father did. My mother was born in Rye, New York.
And her parents were
Their name were Gowland, and they lived in Rye, and her parents were already here.
How far back do they date?
Oh, gee, my mother's dead now.
I meant her parents and grandparents. In other words, how far back in terms of U.S. history?
Oh, gee, I don't know. In fact, I couldn't say, Bob, to be honest with you, but my niece is having my father's name entered at the Statue of Liberty there, Ellis Island, on the wall.
Right.
She had him registered there last year, because he was one that came through there. And he came here when he was 16 years old, and he died in 1932, so he would have been well over 100.
Now, that's your...
My father.
Your father.
Yeah.
But now your mother's parents, you say, were here before...
They were here, but what...
You don't know when they came.
No, they were in Rye, New York. That was their homestead.
Right. I just wanted to ask you about... So you started school about 6 years
old. 6 years old.
Yeah. How many hours a day did you have to go to school?
Well, we went to 9 to 3:30. We had an hour for lunch, and then we had a recess around 10, I guess. 10:30.
Bring your own lunch?
Brought your own lunch. And a lady that lived where, I think Mrs. Driscoll seems to me owned that place now. I forget the name of the lady. She made the cocoa. We went and got the cocoa at 11:45, and we paid 2 cents a cup for a cup of cocoa, hot cocoa. And we carried our own lunch, and we had to be in school at 9, and we got out at 3:30, and we had to walk. When we lived on Brenton Hill, we walked from the top of Brenton Hill, which to Lime Rock was probably a mile and a half, I would say, in that neighborhood, or well over a mile. Winter or summer, you walked it. There was no buses, and you carried your own lunch. But I often think the kids today, if they don't get a lunch in school that they like and pay very little and they didn't write, we didn't, and you did too, without a doubt. You took your own lunch, and the cup of cocoa was really a treat for 2 cents. That was that was really something. I often think of Lime Rock when we were kids growing up there, and the foundries, you know, used to buy iron. They were looking for iron all the while. So when we were kids in the summertime, we'd take the old horse and wagon and go around finding what iron we could find. Take it down there, and they'd weigh it and pay you so much a pound. I forget just what it was. It wasn't a lot, but it was a little. And one time there was a sawmill moving on from down back in the woods there, and they were leaving quite a bit behind. The guy said, if you want it, you can have it. When we were down there banging that stuff up to get whatever iron we could get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd buy it off me for so much pound. But Lime Rock and Falls Village, too, was quite a little area.
Do you recall, I think Marcello was the one that told me, that there were some of the foundry workers that lived on the side of the hill, going up towards what's called Hangman's Hill or that area. They used to burn their fires at night. Do you remember any of that?
I don't remember it, Bob. I've heard tell of them. Were those the charcoal burners?
Burning
the charcoal,
yeah.
Yes. Up here in Salisbury, there used to be several of them on the mountain that made charcoal. But I don't remember it, Bob. That's a little. The first automobile I ever seen, the Barnum & Rich, or Bart Manavison bought it as a little Ford yellow station wagon for delivering groceries. Everything was horses. The big iron ball Mack that they, the iron chain driven Mack that the shop had, Found Immortality drove that. And as you start up that road coming in on the other side of the river there, Bob, coming up, there was a apartment house up on the right. I think the house is probably still there, just as you start in up on the bank.
There is a house there, yeah.
And that was 2 or 3 families lived in there that worked in the foundries.
Do you remember what pay was like at that time?
No, but it wasn't very much, Bob. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it was a couple dollars a day. I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but it wasn't much. Uh-huh. And they worked hard, those fellows.
And what about the grocery store? Did that belong to the company or
no?
Was that,
that belonged to Bardman and Emerson, Bob. They later moved from Lime Rock and opened up a place in Lakeville up on the hill. Going out of Lakeville now, which has all been torn down. There was the big apartment building there, and it had several stores in the first floor, and they had one there, and eventually that they went out of business, and they're all gone. In fact, Harry lived on the White Hollow Road there, just to start up the hill on the right. He lived there till they passed away, he and his wife both. And that's where Dick Barnum's house was on the White Hollow Road on the left. That burned down one day when we were in school in Lime Rock. We all went down at noon to see this fire, this big building going.
Do you remember what year that was?
Let's see. We came up here in 1921. It must have been around 1920, along in there, Bob. It was because everything was fading out then in Lime Rock. But I remember the day it burned. And CW's house burned one night. That went up at night. And that was another big mansion up on the hill, up on the flat near where Philo Lyons had his little store down that flat.
On the main.
Main section. Yep.
All right. So then you moved to Salisbury in 1921.
1921, we came up here, and let's say Lime Rock Salisbury Road was dirt. Twin Lakeville, all those were dirt roads, and where the what they call the courthouse building now, that was a little school downstairs and upstairs too, I think, then. The old schoolhouse has been torn down up on 41. We had 3-4 grades in each room up there.
You mean two schools in existence at the
there
same
was,
time?
There was two schools up here. The courthouse had the little grades.
Oh, I see.
And the upper school had, I guess, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th.
And where was the high school?
The high school was in Lakeville where the post office sits now. That was torn down and the post office was built there, but that was the high school. But high school in those days was a tough thing to get to. My wife, when she wanted to take a course in business, she went to Waterbury to Wilby.
All the way to Waterbury?
Stayed with her aunt, went down, stayed with her aunt for the season. Because you see, there was none of those courses here, Bob.
Yeah.
See? None of those courses. I think Donnie Parsons, Donnie's 84 now, when he graduated, I guess he was the only one graduated, one in that class in high school.
And you went to which school when you got here?
I went up to the central school up here.
Uh-huh.
And my father died in 1932, and we were a pretty large family, so we all went to work, Bob. Went out to work and worked all my life.
What kind of work did you start with?
Well, I started in doing gardening work, Bob. I took over, when my father died, I took over the estate that he was handling for this wealthy family. And a very good friend of my father's name, Mr. Mills, that was the head gardener at Wichert's estate up on the Twin Lakes Road, came down to see me and he said, if I can help you in any way, just call me and I'll be down here. And Mr. Mills was the one that guided me along till I knew what I was doing. And from then on, I worked at several private homes. A few years I went into construction. I worked on Canaan Hospital, big dormitory at Salisbury School, several buildings at Hotchkiss School I worked on. Those big buildings up at Hotchkiss, we'd be there a whole year, so 2 years, some of them. And I worked for community service 14 years. And then I went to the lake in 1951, stayed there 25 years with them. When I took over the lake, as you know, there was nothing there. It was a rundown mess. In fact, the town was ready to give it up.
They said, and what year was that, Frank?
I went there in 1951.
51.
Yeah. The town was ready to throw the sponge in on that. They wasn't running right. The fellows were running, it was drinking. And two very good friends of mine came to me and said, we'd like to have you go to the lake. And I said, well, we have to think it over. So I went down to see Mr. Barnett. And he said, well, you're the guy we're looking for, if you'll come with us. And I went to work there 1 year. I was only supposed to work the summer months. And then they came to me that fall and said, we'd like to have you stay year-round with us. And Mr. Belcher and them, they were ready to quit. They had put in quite a bit of money. It was getting no results. And so they said, if you'll stay the year-round, we'll keep you working all the while. So I said, well, I have to work every day. I can't sit home one day and work one day. So they did. And Mr. Barnett told me, he said, Frank, you're the one that made the Grove. In fact, you're the one that got the money for us. He said, if it hadn't been for you, Belcher's would have pulled out.
Mm-hmm. Sure is a wonderful place now.
Yeah. There was nothing there when I went there, Bob. There was no beach. There was no buildings. There was no lawns. There was no boats. They built the boats. So finally, we used to buy boats from an old gent up here on the 41, and he was going out of business. And Mr. Barnett said, what are we going to do now? We have nobody to build the boats. So I said, well, let me go up there and work with them. Let's buy two boats and let me work with them a couple of days. I think I can pick it up in a hurry. So I went up, and a nice old gent, I'd known him for years, and he showed me everything. He said, if you get stuck when you're starting on your own, let me know. I'll come down and straighten you out.
That was right here in Lakeville?
Right in Lakeville. I started building them right there.
What was his house. Name?
His name was Ed Smith. He was an old-time boat builder. And so the first couple I built, I had a little trouble, but finally it came to me, and I had jotted down what I wanted in a pad so that I'd know what I'd refer back to. And I guess now, all told, Bob, I must have built close to 60 boats. In fact, a fellow called me from Paul and 2-3 weeks ago wanted me to build him a boat. I said, no, not now. But it was a nice job working for the town. And Bill Barnett was a great man for the town. Nort Minor deserves a lot of credit. Nort was the architect.
Yeah.
And the Belchers put all the money into it. And a lot of people were very cooperative. It had to be to make it work. But had a lot of young people work with us, and they all turned out great. Some went on, one went on to be a doctor. Another fellow's working for the nuclear business for the government out in Nebraska and Montana, out there somewhere. One fellow went to work for the state of Wisconsin, aerial photography for forestry. They all made out well. Girls, had several girls that they were terrific. And I had one boy that when I hired him, Mr. Barnett said, you can't make that boy work, he just won't work. I said, let me try him. So he worked me for about a week, and I see he wasn't doing right. So I took him aside, I said, now I'm going to show you how work should be done. Then I want you to do it, I don't care, it takes a little longer, but I want it to look just like mine. You know, he turned out to be one of the best kids I had.
There you are. Yeah.
All I needed was a little guidance.
And a little attention, a little caring.
Yeah.
But
it had a lot of nice boys and girls work for us at the lake.
Now, when you first came up to Salisbury, had you visited Salisbury and Lakeville when you were in Lime Rock?
Not too much. We more or less went to Falls Village and Canaan. We knew people in Salisbury, but we never didn't come up this way too much. And when we moved from Lime Rock, a team with a big wagon and a hay rigging, as you know what they used to call a hay rigging.
Sure.
And that's what the furniture was loaded on and came up by team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the railroad here?
The railroad was running. I remember seeing trains go through here with two engines on with 100 cars on.
Yes.
And this was the big siding up here. The train coming through, the passenger train would slide over on the main, or the one would slide in on the siding and clear the other end of it, way up near the crossing on 44 near the House of Herbs. Mm-hmm. That was all siding.
So we're saying that the big center here was
right here,
on Library
right here.
Street.
Yep, right here. Yep.
And we're talking about between the library and what can we fix on this side? Well, the community
Tri-State, or yeah. We used to call it Tri-State Supply or Community Service.
Right.
But that's where the railroad, that's where they passed those big freights.
And where did the railroad come from and go to?
It started in Maybrook, New York, and went to Hartford, and then switched off on Canaan to Danbury, whichever way they wanted to go. There was a big switching round table in Canaan that they used to switch on. And then they'd go on to Hartford. In fact, I think there was about 4 or 5 trains a day coming through from Hartford and Danbury would meet in Canaan.
And passenger and freight?
Passengers and freights, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Yep. There was a lot of trains went through here, but 100 car freights, you'd see them every few days. And the freight went through at least 2-3 times a day. The community service got all their supplies by freight then.
When did it go out of existence, approximately?
Oh, it went out around the 50s, I think, Bob. Somewhere in the 50s.
And you mentioned that Dr. Reed's home here.
That was the passenger station. And where that building up there, that's where the freight station was, way up there, where they made that bigger.
The building?
Yeah.
Which building?
Where all those stores are.
Oh.
That's where the freight station was located, up there.
Where all the stores
were? Yeah, but they're all, the original station was pulled down and that was built there.
Uh-huh.
See, Tri-State built that there for supplies.
Now, when you say the stores, you're talking about in the center of town.
Yeah, no, right up there.
Oh, there were stores
down
there?
Oh, we got that big building up there, Bob. There's several stores in there. The flower shop is in there.
The one that's there
hairdresser, I guess, in there. Yeah.
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 And what was that building?
That was the freight station.
The
original freight station was pulled out, and that was built there in the place of it.
So that was a freight station, and Dr. Reed's home was the
passenger station. That was torn apart and put into a home. Most of that house was built out of the old railroad station. The Satry boys built that. The ski jumpers. They dug that cellar by hand, and you never seen so many stones and rocks in your life. But that was the main line right there. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you say 3 or 4 trains came through
it? Oh, at least. Yes. The freights and passenger trains. There was the last passenger train through was around 7 at night, I think, coming from Hartford. But they'd go on to Maybrook, New York.
And supposing somebody wanted to go from here to Canaan, would that...
Oh, yeah, you could go to Canaan from here.
Uh-huh. What did it cost, you remember?
No, probably 15, 20 cents.
Yeah.
Because we used to pay 10 cents from Falls Woods to Canaan.
Yeah.
You see, when we were kids growing up in Lime Rock, my mother would go up to Bianchi store to buy the clothes for school. And we'd all go up on the train, 10 cents apiece. That was quite an outing.
Where were the stores? What kind of stores?
We had the meat market, which was Kimberly's, is where the package store is now.
Yeah.
The one where Higgins is, that's a new store. That was built by Louis Trotta after Louis bought out Kimberly. And then he built that store, and they put the liquor store in there. That was all meat market, even where that whole building where the real estate office, Duran has their real estate, that was all part of the meat market. Where I forget what they call that, where they have the big bird sitting out front.
Oh, yeah.
That was a plumbing shop. That was, seems to me, Wheezing, and somebody else had that as a plumbing shop.
Wheezy had that?
Wheezing. Charlie Wheezing. No, that was his name.
Right.
Where Connecticut Yankee was Clark's grocery store. The next place where the bank, then there was the flower shop. That was a barber shop and a shoe repair in back.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that little building was.
That little building
Where the tea room
right.
was. Was a barber shop in the front and a shoe repair in the back.
Uh-huh.
Then the where the bank is was the dry goods store. That belonged to George Clark too. He had both those stores. And then came the drug store. And
the Whitman, Whitbecks were in
Whitbecks,
there.
Trying to think of the guy's name that owned it before Sam. Sam bought that. Oh, that's all way back. And then the post office was in the drugstore. The drugstore was only about half the size of what it is now. And on the right-hand side, looking in from the street, that was the post office. Then they built the new post office. Some people built that. The government doesn't own that post office. That's a privately owned post office.
Oh, the building?
That building is privately owned.
Uh-huh.
And the gold mine bought.
Yeah, they rented, in other words, they have to...
Yeah. Wow. And then came the academy building where the little school was.
Uh-huh.
And that's about what was in... That was Salisbury.
Uh-huh. Was, what's his name, the place there, the legal lawyer's place, was that there next to the church, the Congregational Church?
Oh, yeah. That was Warner.
Warner.
That was Don Warner's law office. That's the son, Don Sharon.
Oh, Don Warner is
that was
the
his
son,
father.
And it was his father. Was he the judge?
Well, there was old Judge Warner who lived down here. I think people have an antique place in it now on the big home on the left.
Uh-huh.
After you pass the Lime Rock Salisbury Road, the second house on the left, the third house now, because the new one built up in back there. That was the old Judge Warner's home. But Don was a lawyer. He was a lawyer, and that was his law office.
And he was a father of Don.
He was the father
yeah.
of Don and Jonathan and all the girls there.
Oh,
forget
yeah.
all the girls' names.
Yeah.
He married a Scoville. See, he was married to forget her first name anyway. She was a Scoville, one of the Scovilles that he married. And as you know, the Scovilles were a big name in town years ago. They owned a lot of property and did a lot of good things, too. Yeah.
That house that is across from a library and across from town hall, that big house used to be a tavern.
Now,
when you came to Salisbury, who had that?
Don Warner had it.
Oh, Don Warner was living there, yeah.
Some of the old-timers say that was a... Some guy had that and ran a livery stable there or something.
Uh-huh.
Forget who they did say it was, Bob, but somebody had that as a livery stable, they say, in there. But when we came, Warner owned it.
Uh-huh. Was there any kind of livery stable or horse stall behind the Congregational Church?
There was horse stalls, yes. There was, and down back at the drugstore was the big sheds, horse sheds. You could rent a stall and had your number on it and put your horse in there. But that was all horse sheds down back in there. Let's see, that would be down about near where Shagroy is now. That was all sheds
in
there.
That area.
That was all horse sheds down in there.
Uh-huh.
Back to Sam Whitbeck, back in the drugstore. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, that's a good picture. And now the library was there.
The library was there.
Yeah.
And Kent Fulton owned the next place. Mm-hmm. And then he owned the big one down, it has just been sold on the right. I think Mrs. Ellsworth's stepson bought it.
Sally Ellsworth?
Yeah, the big place down there. He owned that too. That was I.K. Fulton's.
Uh-huh.
And Warner Maids owned the next one, Fulton. And then I think Dr. Goddard was the next one where... on that same side, next house on the going down on the left, that was Dr. Goddard's house.
Mm-hmm. What did people do for entertainment and recreation and so on when you came to Salisbury at that time?
More or less, Bob, you made your own recreation. But there was a minister in town, Mr. Chiara, and he started a boys'
Mr.
club. Chiara.
Spell that.
I think it was Chiara, or something like that, Chiara.
Right.
I know it started with C, but I would say that's the right, correct spelling.
That's close enough.
But he started a boys' club and had a radio, which was a rarity then. KDKA out of Pittsburgh was the main station. That's about the one you got. And we'd meet down there and we'd play cards, setback, or dominoes. We used to do a little boxing. They have a little program of boxing.
Which church?
That was St. John's.
Oh, that was at St. John's.
Yeah, and we had great skating parties. People got together and formed their own skating parties, cleaned their own ponds. And we'd toast marshmallows, and we'd have sing-alongs around the fire. We had a lot of good times.
Now, these are the younger people.
This is the younger people. The older people, they had square dances. kitchen dances at home, mm-hmm. which was a big thing back years ago. Mm-hmm. Once in a few weeks, there'd be a dance at the town hall. A man by the name of Norfolk, Johnny Garrity, used to play at all those kitchen dances mm-hmm. and dances in the town halls and things. And square dancing was the big thing then. But most of the recreation, we played a lot of baseball when we were young people, and people went to ball games, old and young. Everybody was at the ball game on Sunday afternoon. And then we had the movies in Lakeville. We had the movies pretty every night. And I guess we paid 10 cents to see the movie. And I remember one of the great movies that we all were waiting for and rushed to see was The Covered Wagon, the Great Western.
Yes, sir.
Boy, that was something. And for 10 cents, we went to the movies. And you were lucky to hitch a ride on the Toonerville trolley, as we used to call it. They had one of those bud cars, you know, used to run through. The guys would all jump on the bud car to get a ride to Lakeville. Came later years when the train was...
What did you say, a bud car?
I think they call it a bud car. It's just like a trolley, only one car.
And what ran it, a motor?
A motor. Yeah. And it came out of Hartford area, I guess, when the train started to slow down, when the railroad service started to die out. They jumped this trolley car. We used to call it the Toonerville trolley.
Yeah, yeah.
And ride to Lakeville. And when the guy was trying to collect the tickets, half of them were in the restroom hiding out.
How many minutes did it take?
Four or five minutes. We were down to Lakeville. Yeah. And they'd be all on piling before it got to the station. We had lots of good times.
Why did that die out, that kind of community getting together?
I don't know, Bob. Just seemed to fade away. But we had some great skating parties. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was talking to a girl here, Minnie Carroll. She was talking only a few weeks ago about the great times just to have skating. And we'd get a whole group together and just dance among ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. There were so many things that you could do.
Now, why don't young people get together to do that?
No, not anymore.
Did somebody organize it for you?
No. Just say, well, let's have a little party. First thing you know, you had a gathering.
Yeah.
But those were good times.
Yeah.
I hope it'll come out all right for you.
Oh, no, it will. No, that's good.
Hopefully what we gave you can help you out.
Oh, sure. Now let me see. Frank, what would you... What are some of the major changes that you've lived through in this town? What are some of the differences between today and when you were growing up here?
Gee, I don't know, Bob. There has been a lot of changes. One of the big changes was the tearing down of most of Lakeville. Lakeville used to be the business section of this area. Most all the stores were in Lakeville. Today they're all gone. You take just above the Patco station, there was the A&P,
right.
A&P liquor store, Barnett's dry goods store, Bessie's Lunch down underneath, the telegraph office upstairs, the Bargo's Barbershop, Dufour's Garage, the Hub, which is a restaurant that the Dufour's ran. Those are all gone now. There's nothing there. Up on the hill there was Miller's Tin Shop, plumbing business. Then down later, Boardman Emerson's, Lefferty's Drugstore. They're all gone. There's nothing there. The building's gone. There's nothing there. Lakeville is practically wound up a ghost town, or a ghost village, not the town, because it comes under the town of Salisbury. But Salisbury, the knife handle shop went out. That employed a lot of people.
That was where?
Up on Factory Street.
On Factory Street.
Phil Warner and the Warner family ran that. They made knife handles there and machete handles and hatchet handles, everything. And some of the knives handles were made from bone and rosewood. It was imported. This all was shipped in here, big logs, and they'd slab it up there and cut it up. In fact, Ricky Parsons was one of the fellows that worked there for years in the shop. All the Parsons worked in the shop. in Lakeville was the knife factory. I remember just as it was closing out, the Holly knife manufacturing. There's so many things in Lakeville that Lakeville just went to pieces. There's nothing there.
Did people move away who were living here at that time?
No, there didn't seem too many move away, Bob. It just seems though the business just went out. Okay. There was no business left or what, I don't know. But Salisbury, really the center of the town hasn't changed too much. There's a few new buildings, but Salisbury's about the same. But most of the business have gone out in this area. But years ago, and I guess they still do, a lot of people worked at Hotchkiss School. They employed quite a few up there. And a lot of fellows commuted to Torrington when businesses failed here. I know many fellows. Some drove as far as Hartford. One man I know drove to Hartford for several years. And a lot of them went to Torrington. Some went to Winston. But most of the businesses went out around here. Now, where the ambulance was, that was a big garage years ago. That was Roscoe Brinton's garage. That was a big garage, and it employed a few fellows in there. The White Hart Inn was run by a fellow named Will Russell. He owned the White Hart, and which is the Ragamot now. He owned both of those. And my uncle ran his farm over where it belonged to Crosby later, over by Dutch's Bridge. And they raised all their pork, chickens, eggs, everything was raised on his farm. It came into the inns, came in every day. But those are all changed now. So there has been quite a few changes, Bob, but a lot of fellows still go to Torrington. I know fellows who are driving to Torrington today to work. But
now the young people are surely leaving.
There's nothing here for young people, Bob.
What would it take to keep them here?
Well, hard to say. Canaan has a little more incentive over there for people to stay. They got quite a few factories coming to Canaan. A lot of the people that run those factories in Canaan live in Salisbury.